You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. Whoa, oh, oh, oh. The Punt Podcast, in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
Mercy.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Great, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. Their odds against. Love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the Punt Podcast here at William Hill. Alex Dunn in the presenter's chair this week. Dave Kellner having a, hard-earned week off, but we'll just call it a week off, shall we?
So that's not true.
Yeah, still none the wiser as to actually what he does. But anyway, we've got some really intriguing playoffs to look forward to. Four of them coming your way as the hunt for World Cup glory goes on. We've also got some international friendlies to focus on, we being myself and Andy XL, who's here in the studio. Andy?
Good morning.
All right?
Yeah, good, thanks.
And Derek McGovern, who's on the line. Derek, are you all right?
Yes, I'm very well. All well here.
Good. Right, we'll start with Northern Ireland against Switzerland. This is Thursday at 7:45. Northern Ireland are 12-5. The draw is 2-1, and Switzerland are 13-10. Now, Andy, Northern Ireland have kept seven clean sheets in qualifying so far. Only England have managed more. That said, Switzerland won every single game apart from their last one, yet still didn't qualify automatically.
I know, they were really unlucky to be in that group. And these are two solid sides playing each other, essentially. Although Switzerland have got better players than Northern Ireland, Northern Ireland are massively overachieving to have got this far, and all credit to them. It's going to be a tight game, as you've kind of indicated in your comments. There won't be much in it. First legs always are a bit cagey as well. They don't want to give it away in the first leg. I think Switzerland might just edge it, is how I'm looking at it. So if I was looking for a bet, it'd be Switzerland to win to nil, which is about 23-10 the last time I looked.
Okay.
So, you know, something in that area. It's going to be a really cagey game.
There's plenty of betting on the William Hill website as ever, including your odds. If you want to get involved, hashtag your odds on Twitter to at William Hill. There's enhanced odds as well. Lafferty to score Northern Ireland to win, pushed out from 4s to 5s. And Seferovic to score in Switzerland to win from 16-5 out to 4-1. Derek, I was surprised to see Northern Ireland quite as big as 12-5 here. I mean, let's face it, Switzerland, they're not world beaters, are they?
No, they won all those matches in that group because it was an easy group. That's the reason. What you've got here is a defensive manager, O'Neill, for Ireland, playing even more defensively. When this draw was made, he was saying, well, we're playing at home first and it's key that we don't concede an away goal. So you know exactly how they're going to set up here. I noticed that the price for under 1.5 goals is normally around 2-1 in a Premier League contest. It's 13-10 here. That tells you how the bookies see this game going. It's also how I see this game going too. I mean, they say Northern Ireland have done brilliantly because their squad is largely made up of players from clubs outside the Premier League, but so is Switzerland's, by the way. But both sides will consider a 0-0 draw here as a great result. And that, in fact, I don't even think there's going to be that many goals. 11-2, 0-0, nailed on.
Okay. I was going to say, it is short, isn't it? But at the same time, if you are looking for a correct score, 11-2 is shorter than you'd normally take, but at the same time, it's kind of really obvious, isn't it?
Actually, I was going to ask Andy this. You know, it's always been my belief when the match odds dictate what the odds are for, you know, half time, full time, etc. All the other odds are dictated by the match odds, but that's not the case here, is it?
No,
human hand has tinkered the odds here to go low on the goals.
Yeah, there's generally two things you take into account. The two teams, who they are, and then how many goals you expect. Mm. So the second bit might be governing the prices here. And you might be right. There is a bit of, we think we know what the customer's going to think, what the punter's going to think. So we're bending it in that direction a little bit.
That said, if you do think, listeners, that there are going to be goals, you're getting 2-1 for over 2.5, which is incredible, but at the same time, pretty unlikely. Yeah. I think it's actually a pretty fair price. So, right, so in terms of bets, Derek, you're going for 0-0?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, Andy?
Switzerland to win 2-0. So not 2-0 by the score, but to win and not concede.
2-0, yes. Great. Yeah. Okay, we'll move to the Republic of Ireland then. They are taking on Denmark on Saturday night. Denmark are 3-4, the draw is 9-4, and the Republic of Ireland are in the betting at 9-2. Derek, we'll start with you here. Ireland have scored in each of their last 9 away internationals now. Is that going to continue here?
Well, they've got a real chance here. I mean, they've got this draw, it hasn't been unkind to them. You know that Denmark, they've only lost one of their last 8 competitive home games. So you think, well, this is a tall order for the Republic. But Denmark, they finished 5 points behind Poland in an easy group. This is not a great team. This is not one of the Danish teams of the mid-90s. This is a bog-standard Danish team. And I don't think the Republic of Ireland have got anything to worry about. My only worry, if I was backing them at 9-2, which is what I will be doing to get a first leg lead, is that I don't think ambition is going to be high up on the Republic's priorities. I think they're going to, like the Northern Irishmen 2 days earlier, I think they're going to try and keep it tight. I just hope they change that mindset, because this is a beatable Denmark team. And I think I don't think Denmark should be odds on, basically. If I can equate it to a Premier League contest, it's like West Ham or Southampton being odds on. Whenever that happens, I want to oppose.
Yeah.
And I'm going to oppose Denmark here.
It's probably reflected, Andy, in the fact that the to qualify market has Denmark 4-6, Republic of Ireland 11-10. So Denmark marginal favourites, but nothing like the discrepancy that we're seeing in the 90 minutes betting.
You've got two similar teams here, although I have to say I'm against the tide in general and in the office here. I really think Denmark are a good thing.
Okay.
But I'm a bit out of an island there, so don't take me as the global view for William Hill. But no, I think Christian Eriksen's an absolute class player, and they're going to have trouble shutting him down. And the self-proclaimed best player that ever existed, Nicholas Bentner, is actually in great form at the moment. In club football, he scored 17 goals this season. He is actually in great form. And I think they're really going to struggle to hold them back here. They've got other good players. Paulson, who plays for Red Bull Leipzig. Sister, who plays for Celta Vigo. They've just got better players across the card, I think. Particularly in the final third. And, yeah, Derek's right. Martin O'Neill will send them out. Just get a 0-0 and take them home.
Yeah.
So, again, it'll be a cagey first leg. But I think Denmark might have a bit too much for him.
OK. So Denmark are 3-4. If you do want to back Christian Eriksen any time, by the way, he's 23-10. 6-1 first and last in this. And he could well be the class act on the field, if you like. So
he definitely is the class act on the field.
I was going to say, yeah. without question. In fact, he's the only player on both sides that does have that star quality, if you like. The rest of them just seem to be, with all due respect, pretty grafty.
If I go back to the Republic of Ireland playing for a 0-0, they're probably going to start Shane Long up front, who's Derek McGovern scored more recently than him.
Now, that's true. Interestingly, though, the last time that these two did play each other, Shane Long did score twice in a 4-0 win. That was in 2007, though. That might have been his last goal, to be fair.
Yeah.
Probably that's definitely the last time I scored, anyway.
Right, so it's going to be Denmark for Andy and Derek.
Republic at 9-2. I think it's worth a tenner of anyone's money, as long as it's not your own.
We're going to focus on the other two qualifiers just briefly now, starting with Croatia and Greece. This one is on Thursday at 7:45. Croatia 4-11, the draw is 7-2, and Greece are 9-1. Croatia are a really short price here, Andy. They are an inverted commas sexy team, if you like, here.
Yeah.
Greece are Greece. Can they out-Greece Croatia?
Well, there's two things here. Croatia are the inverse of Northern Ireland. They've massively underachieved in the qualifiers, and they shouldn't be going through this. They should be good enough to beat Greece, even if Greece had all their people available. But the thing for Greece is they're likely to be without both centre-halves. Manolas has been suspended, controversially, for getting deliberately booked.
Yeah.
So they've actually pushed the suspension back again, which means he misses this because he was trying to get a suspension against Gibraltar. And the other guy, Sokratis, got injured for Dortmund last weekend and he's doubtful for this game. So that Greek rear guard that would normally put the wall up and park several buses isn't as strong as it might look. So I've got to be with Croatia.
Okay. How many buses are there in Greece, Derek? Because they'll probably be putting all of them in front of the goal here.
Yeah, that stood them in good stead. It won it when they won the championship in 2000 and whenever it was, 2004. Yeah, a big 9-1 to beat the Croatians. It just seems a little bit big to me, doesn't it? It's not a good time to be Croatian, or at least if you're Slaven Bilic or Dejan Lovren. I said before, they're such a laughingstock internationally over the last few years. They're now called Greece 2. They got beat twice by the Faroe Islands in the qualifying for Euro 2016. That takes some doing, that, doesn't it? That explains why they're 9-1. Croatia should win this. They should do, but in international football, in a playoff like this, 4-11 is mighty short. And I can just say one thing in Greece's favour. This is the third successive World Cup playoff they've been in. The first one was against Romania and then against Ukraine. And they got through both of them. You know, they're capable of getting through against Croatia, you know. Mm. You know what? I'm going to go for Greece with a goal start here. I think that's the way to play. I'm not ambitious enough to back them at 9-1, but Greece with a goal start, taking on the 4-11 Croatians, got to be a bit of mileage there.
2-1 if you fancy that, and if you fancy backing Greece to qualify, it's available at 12-5. If you do think Croatia are going to go and smash the Greeks, then minus a goal is 11-10 for the Croats. But Greece plus a goal for Derek. Andy, what would your best bet be in this?
Again, Croatia to win without conceding.
Okay.
You know, again, Greece just can't score goals.
No, so makes sense. Winter nil is 3-4,
yeah,
which could look massive, actually, in hindsight, but we'll have to wait and see. The final one that we're going to focus on is Sweden-Italy, the final qualifier, that is. Sweden 12-5, the draw 21-10, Italy are 5-4. Italy were unlucky, Derek, to bump into Spain in qualification, but as a result of that, they were always pretty much resigned to the fact that they were going to have to go through the playoffs. So they're not going to be too crushed that they have to face Sweden here. Sweden actually overachieved, if you like, managed to pip Holland to that second place. They were behind France in their group. Italy, though, 5-4 away from home doesn't scream value to me.
No, it doesn't. And Sweden beat France in June, by the way. I watched Italy against Spain a couple of months ago. I actually backed them. I thought they were good things because I thought the Spanish were being massively overrated. Italy were absolutely diabolical. And since then, they've been held at home by Macedonia. You know, they beat Sweden at Euro 2016 in a group game, but they had as their manager then Antonio Conte. They've now got a 69-year-old journeyman coach who's never managed a major club before. And it's looking like it at the moment, the way the Italians are playing. I can give Sweden a go. Hey, you know, they've had some decent performances, decent results. And at these odds, I think they're good things.
Okay. It's interesting, isn't it, Andy? Because you think of Sweden, you think Henrik Larsson, you think Ibrahimovic. At the minute, they don't have that talisman, that one player who everyone's scared of, but they've got a lot of pretty talented individuals.
Yeah, they've got a solid team through the lineup. And I was listening to a couple of interviews from a couple of their players this week where they basically said, yeah, when Zlatan was playing, we just wanted to get the ball to him. Mm. And the whole thing was about getting the ball to him because he was going to win the game for us. But since he's retired, they've all sort of stepped up and accepted more responsibility, and they actually feel more of a group. So, and they've played like it. They're a decent, solid outfit. And Italy are not as good as they would traditionally be.
Yeah.
So, again, I think it's just going to be a really cagey first. I think 0-0 or 1-1, but a draw is where I'm going.
Okay. The 0-0 is 13-2. The 1-1 is 11-2. And if you want to back the match result and both teams to score, that's available at 16-5 for the draw. In this one, the draw on its own is 21-10. But no one siding with the Italians, it would seem. Sweden 9-4 to qualify, by the way, if you are going in with Derek, and 12-5 to win in 90 minutes on this occasion.
There's still plenty of domestic football taking place across the continent this week, and the Spanish Segunda could well have offered up one of the bets of the weekend. Top of the table, Granada entertains Sevilla's second side, who are currently bottom in the 11 a.m. kickoff on Sunday. In almost any league after 13 games, 4-6 for top of the table versus bottom of the table at home has to look tempting, but it's even more tempting when you delve into the respective home and away records of the two sides involved. Granada are unbeaten at home this season, drawing 2 and winning 4 of their 6 games so far. Those last 4 wins have been in their last 4 games too, and they haven't exactly been nicking wins by the odd goal, they've been winning comprehensively. A 3-1 win against Cordoba has been followed up with a pair of 2-0 wins against Lugo and Oviedo before a 4-1 win against Lorca in their last home game. All four of those teams have amassed more points than Sevilla Atletico this term, and they've struggled away from home this season. No wins on the road all season, and they've lost three of their last four, including 3-0 defeats to both Almeria and Sporting Gijón. All in all, this points to a comfortable victory for the home side for me, and Granada minus a goal at a massive 15-8 looks the bet of the weekend.
We'll move now to the international friendlies concerning the home nations coming up this week. We'll start with Scotland against Holland. This one's Thursday at 7:45, and this is very much the friendly that no one wanted. Scotland would have hoped to be in a playoff. Holland certainly would have expected to be in one. Interesting, though, Scotland haven't lost a home international, Andy, since September 2015, and that was against Germany. They're unbeaten in eight since then. And you have to go back to November 2013 for the last time Scotland failed to score at home. Scotland are 13-5, the draw 9-4, Holland 11-10. But you'd imagine both sides will be experimenting a little bit here.
Yeah, although if you're looking at the enthusiasm of the two teams, shall we say, to play this game, Scotland look like they're going to blood a load of new players. Mm. So they're going to be up for it. And like you say, they're always up for it at home. Whereas I think Holland, they'd rather be anywhere else.
Yeah.
They'd rather be in Lidl than than here. So, you know, Holland should be the better team, but are they? Mm. That's the question. Because they've not done it for ages.
But at the same time, Derek, the 11-10 available on Holland, is that at all tempting, or is that basing it on reputation alone?
Yeah, well, it is. If it was a competitive fixture, I would consider backing them at 11-10 because I know how ordinary Scotland are, but I can't take those odds about the away team in a friendly international when a draw. You know, both managers will be happy with a draw. It means you don't get sacked for the next game. Yeah, the interim manager for Scotland, Marky Mackay, called up only two recognised strikers for this squad. That shows you how hard pushed he is. One of those, Lee Griffiths, has pulled out injured, and I don't recognise the other one. Holland failed to qualify but have won their for the World Cup, but have won their last three competitive matches. In fact, they've won five of their last six matches. So all this doom and gloom about the Dutch, maybe it's been a little bit misplaced. Okay, they didn't qualify, but that's happened to England before. In a competitive fixture, I'll be all over Holland, but I think the draw here is just shading it for me.
9-4 for the draw, or if you want to back the match result and both teams to score in the draw, that's 16-5. Andy, what would your best bet be in this?
No bet, probably. I'd probably be with Derek on the draw, because just Scotland have got so much of an unknown factor. That's why I'd shy away from it for a betting medium. But if I was going anywhere, I would be the draw as well.
And once again, plenty of markets on the William Hill website. The enhanced odds, Matt Phillips to score, Scotland to win, pushed out from 13-2 to 8. And Vincent Janssen to score and Holland to win, pushed out from 5-2 to 3-1. England against Germany coming up next. This is Friday at 8 o'clock. England are 15-8, the draw 23-10, and Germany are 29-20. Germany have won 7 in a row now, and they haven't won 8 in a row since 1980, which is incredible, Derek. But for the umpteenth time in the last few years, this is likely to be a much-changed England lineup with quite a few injuries, mainly to the Tottenham boys.
Yeah, well, you see, Germans haven't got a good sense of humour, but ever since they saw the England squad, they haven't stopped laughing. I mean, because I've been looking at this England squad, and most of the players in it, at some stage of their careers, have been out on loan. I think most of them still would be if money anyone would have them. It's got to be the weakest England squad I've ever seen, and I have seen a few under Roy Hodgson and various other clowns in charge. I've got to go for Germany here. No matter how uncommitted they might be, this England team could be beaten by anybody right now. Mm. And I've got to go for Germany. I know it's at Wembley and all that, but it's a big fixture, I suppose. You know, it's only a friendly, but it's still a big fixture in terms of, you know, oh yeah, you know, Germans are beating England again, and they will. I'm going to go for Germany.
Okay, Andy,
same. With the England squad, I wouldn't quite go as far as Derek has in terms of its strength, but one thing that stuck out to me, and this is how conventional Gareth Southgate is, 18 of the 22 outfield players are owned by five teams.
Mm.
Manchester City, Man United, Chelsea, Tottenham and Liverpool. He's just looking at the big teams and saying, yeah, I'll pick their players. There's no thought or creation in it at all. And I just don't like... And without, you know, without any incisive midfield player, if if he plays Loftus-Cheek, I'll be happy, because I know I've taken some stick in recent weeks for suggesting England should build around Jack Wilshere.
Yeah.
But it was a Jack Wilshere type I was actually talking about, and Loftus-Cheek is that type. That player who can play that pass, that the incisive pass in the final third. So if they play him, they've got a chance. But it's asking a lot of a young lad to do that against the Germans, and I've got to be with Germany.
I was going to say, you mentioned the fact that most of the players are for just one of a few clubs. Then the ones that he does pick up from others are the likes of Jake Livermore, who's... he's OK, but... I'm going to make a case here as a impassioned Newcastle fan that Jonjo Shelvey should be at least considered. No?
Yeah, you should. I remember writing, I think it might have been even before the Euros, the season that began the Euros. When the Euros were last year, was it? The start of last season, I said Shelvey should be in the England squad for the Euros, because I do rate him. I think he's a far more talented player than the likes of Jordan Henderson and people like that.
They're crying out, aren't they, for some creativity?
Yeah, well, if Livermore can get in the England team, well, I mean, Shelvey should be captain.
But there's hope for anyone, seemingly, at the minute. If you're English, particularly if you are playing for one of the top five, but this is the chance to come and state your claim. Well, some of the players will be thinking that, the likes of Tammy Abraham, Loftus-Cheek and the like.
Well, yeah, you've got a chance there. I mean, if, just to comment on the Shelvey thing, I don't mind him as a player. I just don't like him as a person.
No, I don't think many people do.
And the other thing is, I just think he plays a bit too deep for what England need. But I wouldn't... Yeah, he's got to get in ahead of some people that are. But yeah, I just want to see some imagination, and I just don't see any. It's the same old, same old.
So, betting-wise, you're both with Germany?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, 29-20 on Friday night. And also on Friday night, we've got France against Wales, also an 8 o'clock kickoff. France are 4s on, the draw 4-1, and Wales are 10-1 for this one. Wales returned to France for the first time since reaching the semi-finals of Euro 2016. The last time that they played France, they won 1-0. That was in 1982, though, Andy, and Ian Rush was on the score sheet.
Well, yeah, we're going back to Derek McGovern scoring again, aren't we? I just think this is not a game to be with Wales. I know France are plenty short, but I just wonder whether the fire's gone out the Welsh dragon after their recent failure to qualify. And obviously, Mr. Bale's not there as well. So, you know, I just think it's a tough game for them, this one, to really... And, you know, are the players really going to get themselves up for it again? They've got sort of league things to consider and stuff like that. So, I'd have to be with France.
And France also, Derek, who obviously are quite used to playing friendlies like competitive games, because they didn't play a competitive game for so long in the build-up to the Euros. They're not going to be super hyped up for this, but nevertheless, they should have enough, shouldn't they?
Yeah, they should do. Wales without Gareth Bale, they're just, you wouldn't back them to beat anybody, would you? Without Bale, he's the man that makes them tick. The French should win, but the 1-4, you don't get rich back in 1-4 pokes in friendly internationals. I'd have to play on the handicap mark, and I'd still keep my stakes low. I would go France -2 goals at 11-5.
Okay, 11-5 for -2. Your best bet, Andy?
Well, again, we're spotting our tendencies there. Derek tends to go towards the handicaps, and I'll go towards the favourite to win without conceding. So I'm going the same way here. France to win 2-0 at small odds on.
Yeah, we've got... what price are we on that? There we go. 3-4. Yeah, it's one of those things that I just can't see Wales scoring in this.
Exactly. It's trying to squeak some value out of a game where there doesn't appear to be much there.
And if you do fancy some anytime goal scorer betting, Griezmann 21-20, Giroud 21-20, Lacazette 11-10, as is Mbappe, there's plenty that you'll want to get your teeth stuck into, I would imagine, in this. I think it could be a bit of a bloodbath in the end. I think France could dominate. Right, in terms of naps then this week, we'll start with you, Andy. What's the best bet?
I'm going to steal Germany.
Okay.
Germany to beat England, I think, is odds against, is a great price.
29-20, the nap for Andy. And Derek?
I'll go Ukraine, 21-20 to beat Slovakia.
Okay. Why is that?
Ukraine have been disappointed at the top level, but they're always capable of you know, I've seen them a few times against big countries, and I'm thinking, they're gonna do well in a big tournament soon, and they always disappoint me. But they're well capable. I've seen Slovakia a few times, and sorry, they won't be doing anything in this.
Okay, 21-20 then for Ukraine. That is also on Friday night in the international friendlies. Right, great stuff, chaps. Pleasure talking to you both. Dave Kellner will, I think, be back for the... Well, he won't be back this weekend. Anyway, we'll see. He'll be back soon. Andy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. McGovern, thank you very much.
Cheers, pleasure.
And Derek, you're going to stay on the line, actually, because we're going to catch up with John Cross now from The Mirror in just a few moments.
Now at William Hill, you can get your bet onto the website for featured matches. If there's a bet you fancy that's not on the app, just tweet with the hashtag YourOdds to @WilliamHill and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag YourOdds from William Hill.
I'm delighted to say that John Cross has now joined myself and Derek on the line. John, how's things?
Yeah, very good. Nice to be with you, actually. Looking forward to a good international week of football. I love international football. It's a break from the norm in the Premier League, isn't it?
I was going to say, you're chief football writer at the Daily Mirror, and it must be quite a nice break for you just to not have the constant build-up to the Premier League action.
Well, I don't know about that. Funny enough, I always think international weeks are sort of... It should be sort of maybe thinking about England, but actually what it generally turns into is who's going to be the next manager, who's going to be the next one to go, who's going to be the next through the door... And generally, we go back to revert to type and talk about the Premier League for the first few days, and then only get serious sort of the day before or something, really. Because I tell you what, international week generally signals sacking season for Premier League managers, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that. We are going to touch on that in a few moments. We're going to start with an international theme, though, because this is the first international punt that we've had since England under-17s won the under-17 World Cup, and. Everything I've got written down here seems to be a negative. John, you almost forget that they did win the tournament and the things that have happened since then, that the sort of media backlash almost in a way, seems to detract from the fact that actually they did bloody well to win the thing.
Yeah, they do. I mean, it's funny, isn't it? I think sometimes we bask in the glory for the day when it happens. And I do think the sort of the BBC got over 3 million viewers, didn't they? And sort of kind of... watching the under-17s, it was a really good performance. And then it made fantastic headlines, sort of front page of Sunday newspaper pullouts and really big reads. And then I think there comes the next wave of stories. When are these kids ever going to make the grade? Or are these kids ever going to make the grade? And kind of, you know, and sort of it sort of merges into a bit of FA fallout. And the FA are actually making changes, aren't they, already to the system that has identified and brought through some of these kids. I'm talking about sort of talent ID and that sort of kind of being ripped up and sort of restructured and reshaped. And then it's much more the focus, I think, about some of these kids and really where they're going to sort of make the grade and get the opportunity at their clubs, which, of course, is always the biggest thing.
Yeah, and of course, Derek, within, it seemed like, hours, we had Danny Murphy saying that he wasn't happy with the players for having their shirts on back to front when picking up the trophy. What did you make of that?
Yeah, well, normally for England side, they have the boots on back to front, but it was an unedifying sight. So their names were prominent for the pictures rather than the England badge. I, to be honest, I thought it was a bit stomach churning, and whichever bright spark in that squad was the first to pitch that idea. Once a big smack on the bum.
It's interesting. I was looking through the previous, it was 10 years ago, the squad for the 2007 under-17 World Cup. And there's only two players from that lineup who actually went on to get senior caps. That's Danny Rose and Danny Welbeck. The rest of them are, well, the sort of average level seems to be now National League, to be honest. You've got a couple playing for Hartlepool, Maidstone, Gainsborough Trinity. You do still have Rose and Welbeck in there and Victor Moses as well. And a few have gone on to forge decent careers. But, John, this is no indication that these players are definitely going to go on and make the grade, in inverted commas.
No, it's not. And what interests me is particularly, I do think there's obviously, I think there's a very, very sort of high churn. The only teams, I think, recently, in recent times, in generations, to have bucked that trend have been Spain and Germany. And we laud them because they win youth tournaments and then actually bring through the sort of the generations and groups of players together. That's why that sort of kind of obviously they get the credit that they actually do get, and it's sort of really, really richly deserved. I think sort of talking to people, I think we might see a similar story in the under 20s. I don't mean to be sort of kind of a sort of merchant of doom here, but I think there's going to be special ones that sort of stand out. I think Calvert-Lewin is already sort of making the grade and sort of kind of obviously, you know, sort of pulling up trees there. But really, I do think you've got to be sort of questioning the really special, exceptional talents. If you're that good, you're playing in first teams and you're making headlines for your first teams, for the clubs at 17, 18. And I don't think that that is necessarily going to be the case. So I'm not sure how many will make it out of the under-20s group. It's a challenge for them. But I think what the FA and England see is a special group having emerged from the under-17s. And that's the difference for them. So I think that, basically under-17s contains really sort of good pockets. I mean, you sort of kind of seen Phil Foden, for example, getting a lot of headlines. Hudson-Odoi looks a really, really good player at Chelsea. I thought he was the best player in the final, actually. And it's just, I think you're going to see a few of those really sort of kind of come through. And they think the under-17s is a really special group. But it is about kind of bucking that trend, because historically, where England have failed is getting those players into the Premier League first teams. And I actually think they've got to come through sooner rather than later to actually make the grade, to stand a chance.
Yeah.
You know, excelling at that level, under-17 level, it counts for diddly when it comes to making the grade at the top level. It really does. I mean, let me throw these names at you. Martin Vukcevic, Luke Saville, Gianluigi Quinzi, Philip Poliwo. Now, you won't have heard of them, but they all won the Wimbledon junior title between 2010 and 2013. So you imagine they'd be in Grand Slam contention now, at least one or two of them. They go out of tournaments, challenger tournaments, even earlier than Englishmen. I mean, it matters nothing. Excel at youth level, great, great. You know, look at Ian Wright. He came from nowhere, became an England legend, didn't he? Excelling at youth level means nothing in the big scheme of things.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I do think the biggest issue I think the Premier League has is a non-competitive Premier League 2. So that joke of an under-23s league, where you are seeing kids playing kids, passing it very nicely in lots of pretty triangles, but it does not develop kids. If you basically want to make it in the Premier League and you've played in the England under-17s, you've got to go out and play. Whether that means you go out on loan or whether your first team gives you an actual opportunity. I mean, let's see City. City have a brilliant academy. They will produce great kids. But are they producing kids for Man City? That's the question. And I have to say, they signed in the summer Bernardo Silva, who is a carbon copy of Phil Foden. Is Pep Guardiola, who's been great for kids in the past, going to pick Phil Foden over £40 million plus signing? Let's see.
I see what you're saying there, but at the same time, you cannot deny that Phil Foden is a special talent. And he's the one who's sort of come out of that tournament with everyone going, hang on. But he's also played for Man City in pre-season. He's had moments. Does he need to make that breakthrough, though, in the next year or two? Or does he risk then going backwards, if you like, in his career, ending up being, on loan at X, Y, and Z in the Championship? Because we have seen that with plenty of players who have shown this kind of ability at such a young age.
Yeah, I think maybe you've got to take a chance. I do think it's horses for courses, because I think you look at Spurs, Harry Winks was cherished and sort of nurtured at home because he's a sort of a delicate, small player, technical player, really good, and he didn't need to be sent out on loan to the Championship to get kicked up in the air in League One or anything like that, really. But Harry Kane did then find part of his graduation going out on loan playing men's football in the lower divisions. So I do think it's a different one, but Foden is like Winks for me. I mean, he'd need to be playing and nurtured at a top club. I'm not for a moment knocking academies like Man City and Chelsea, because they are the best academies and they basically produce really good kids. Are they producing kids really who are going to make it at their own clubs? That's the other issue.
Okay. Now, you mentioned as well the fact that it's International Week, so we often talk about the managerial merry-go-round, and it's going to be no different this time. As we record this on Tuesday morning, David Moyes has just been announced as the West Ham manager. You've got Moyes at West Ham. You've got Allardyce talking to Everton as we record this. Derek, have I fallen asleep and woken up in 2011? What's going on?
Well, that's it. These managers, once they get on the gravy train, it's impossible to fall off it. They're being rewarded for failure. Then again, Moyes, I suppose, in 10 months at Old Trafford, he did what Fergie failed to do in over two decades. He made United popular again. I mean, yeah, this man, David Moyes, is a byword for failure. But then again, so are West Ham. So the two are probably fifth. He's 100% behind them, according to the owners, David Sullivan and David Gold. I'd suspect on his record, it would be 50% Sullivan behind him, 50% Gold. I notice Hills are doing odds on when he'll last the season. I suspect not. This manager, if I was sent into West Ham, could I do a worse job than David Moyes? I think not.
Okay. So pretty damning indictment of David Moyes. John, what about you?
Do you know what? I like to think of, and hopefully Derek will vouch for me on this, I like to think of myself as sort of a fairly nice bloke and quite charitable when you sort of get on with people. And I'm a bit naive. I'm a bit ridiculous when it comes to football, really, that I am coloured by what I make of people. And I really like Slaven Bilic because he was ever such a nice bloke. And I feel quite the same, really, about David Moyes. So I kind of, it's wishful thinking. I really wanted to see him do well. Look, I just feel the thing is with David Moyes is that they've given him a 2.5-year contract, which is now painted as a deal until the end of the season because he has indeed got that break clause. I just feel that he's going there. I don't think that's kind of almost the way to go in. Just say he's got a 2.5-year contract. I don't think that helps him from the off. I do think he's got a squad easily good enough to stay up. They should be nowhere near the bottom three, in my view. And I think Moyes has got an experience and a burning desire, I think, to prove a few people wrong, a few doubters wrong. Because he had 11 years, solid years at Everton. Yes, they're the kind of bad ones in between. But I just think, generally, he's a good, proven Premier League manager who will make West Ham harder to beat, better drilled, better trained. And I think that they will look a better outfit as soon as he takes over. And I do still think that he will keep them up. Not much beyond that, but I do think he'll keep them up.
Don't you think this is very much last chance saloon for David Moyes, though?
100%. It is basically that. That's basically, this is the last chance, I think, at a big club. And I think he knows that. And I think he'll relish that challenge and take that opportunity.
Interesting, I saw on Twitter a little earlier, David Moyes signed a contract at Man United until 2019. In that time, he's managed them at Real Sociedad, Sunderland and West Ham, and still got a year left as well. I mean, how can someone's stock fall so rapidly, Derek? Because, let's face it, he did do a good job at Everton.
Well, did he? One season, he made the Champions League, which is an exceptional for him. But suppose in 10 years at a club, you know, you've got to do something like that. One in 10. I don't think he took Everton to any further than they were expected to be. But some of the things, his press conference manner, that's almost as important now for a club. It's how their manager performs in front of the cameras. And he is such a doubt. I tell you what, he couldn't inspire me to go for a dump after a night on the ale and the curry, David Moyes. I just think he's a dismal appointment.
Okay, I'm sensing that you're not the biggest Moyes fan, Derek. I don't know what has quite led me to think that. But
well, hang on, there's a clue. He managed Man United and he managed Everton.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. What about the Everton situation then? As we're recording this, Allardyce has been apparently in talks with Everton. Obviously, by the time that people listen to this, it may be cut and dried. It may be that it isn't going to happen. But, John, Allardyce to Everton, I mean, surely that is a step back for a club who, at the start of the season, promised so much. And now it seems we're already sort of panicking and saying, right, we just need to stay up for now.
Yeah, he seems a rock-solid appointment to me, to be honest. But if I'm honest, that is not... People might immediately sort of say, oh, well, that's great, that's what Everton need. But I'm not sure it is, really. I'm surprised. I think if Everton really wanted to show a bigger ambition, then they should have gone for Sean Dyche. I just think that Allardyce gives you a guarantee that you'll stay in the division. But are we really talking about relegation for Everton? I'm not sure that we are. And so I just think the win at the weekend meant that Everton have kind of got breathing space. They shouldn't really be thinking about relegation. And listen, I was one stupid enough to think actually they might challenge for the top four this season, bearing in mind the money they spent. They obviously didn't sign the centre-forward, which was a massive issue. But I'm not convinced that Allardyce is a great fit for that, particularly bearing in mind, obviously, he quit Palace in the summer, citing that basically he'd had enough of kind of top-level management for now. Thanks very much. And I still think the doubts remain. And I don't know that it's really a good fit for Everton. I've got more of my doubts about this one. Not that I think Everton will go down for a moment, but more of my doubts about this one than Moyes for West Ham.
Okay. Now, it's obviously we are almost speculating right now because the Allardyce deal is not done by any means as we're recording this. But Derek, Allardyce is a man who, to my recollection anyway, I can't remember a single number 10 that he's actually played. And he's going to a club where they've got four of them. What's he going to do?
Yeah, will he get rid of them? That's a certainty. I mean, poor Everton, they've gone from a Dutch exponent of total football to an English exponent of total crap. I mean, you know, Allardyce has won a lot of plaudits for keeping teams up. But Sunderland job apart, I can't think of a team that he kept up against the odds. All were likely to be stay up anyway. Even Crystal Palace. I mean, they had the squad to stay up. I know they were in a bit of trouble when he took over, but I could have led them to safety. Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who was in disgrace as well after the way his England job ended. It seems to me that the chairman love him, but the fans hate him wherever he goes. He's the only man who gets booed at home more than I do. It's just I just can't have him. His appointment, if he is appointed, it will go down like a lead balloon with Everton fans. But mind you, at the moment, Everton are in danger of going down like a lead balloon. So he might be the man for them. If he does take over, his first match will be against Roy Hodgson's Crystal Palace, another failed England manager. It'll be the first match in Premier League history in which a ball is merely optional.
Well, but do you think that we are in a real, not a sacking culture, but Bilic has been walking a tightrope seemingly for the last 18 months or so. It's hard to remember a time when he was at West Ham when he wasn't under pressure. Our manager's just jumping now, John, and a chairman going, right, get out now, quick, because of the pressures of potentially going down. Is it just panic sacking, in effect?
Well, the funny thing is about Golden Sullivan at West Ham, you can criticise them for many things, but one thing is they've been sort of kind of loyal and actually tried to give him a chance. So I do think that, I get the impression you thought earlier in the season, he might have been, his numbers might have been up then, let alone now. But I think generally in the Premier League, it has become that second culture. I mean, that if ever you needed proof of that, that was De Boer at Crystal Palace. So, I mean, we've barely kicked off the season and he's already picking up his P45. I mean, it is ridiculous. And I think sometimes you've so got to be... I mean, I do think that part of the issue for me is that we always show the manager the door, and that's understandable because he's easily got riddable. But I do think with the sort of owners and chief executives, whoever they might be, I think obviously because they've got ownership and sort of part of the club, they're above criticism. I think it's time we looked, I think, at the sort of the circumstances and the platform that they give managers. Because I tell you what, we are in that sacking culture. I mean, it was crazy. I sort of read one back page at the weekend saying that it's sort of a fifth of Premier League managers were sort of under the cosh. If it wasn't kind of Bilic at the weekend, then they were already sort of talking maybe about Paul Clement being under the cosh at Swansea, Tony Pulis at West Brom, for example, Pellegrino indeed at Southampton, because I don't think everything is well there. So honestly, we've got to kind of, I think, give managers a chance in a bit of time, because honestly, to dispense with them so easy just seems ridiculous.
No, I think that's pretty fair. Well, thank you very much, John, for joining us. And Derek, thanks very much as well for your thoughts on the international games this weekend. Enjoy the football coming up, and we'll catch up with you both soon.
Look forward to it. Thanks a lot.
And now I reckon it's about time for a Naps update.
So Dave Kellner's away and hasn't updated the Naps table, can you believe it? I'm away as well, but I'm going to spend 30 seconds of my time updating it as best I can. DK probably tipped a winner, Al will have napped something pretty good, Pete would have been unlucky, Gav came close, Andy tipped Burnley, and Derek was hopelessly wrong again. I'm not even mentioning the Euro boys, because Alex is presenting the podcast. We'll have a full updated Naps table next week.
Obviously, no championship football to look forward to over the course of the weekend. But what about Leagues 1 and 2? Here's Gav Puszulowski and Al Ross with their best bets.
My nap selection in League 1 this weekend is all about a home side who have won 5 of their 7 games at home, and they are not deemed the favs against an away side who have won only 2 of 8 away from home, having lost 4 of their last 5 on their travels. Portsmouth appear to be the favs away at Blackpool, and I can't have it. Blackpool at 17-10 on my NAP selection. Both these teams are smarting from FA Cup defeats and being knocked out of the tournament at the first round. Portsmouth away at Luton and Blackpool away at Boreham Wood after taking the lead. So they'll be truly smarting from that one, Blackpool. And Blackpool are 12th, Portsmouth are 14th. And everything Blackpool do in terms of gaining points is generally what they do at home. As mentioned, 5 wins in 7 home games for Blackpool. They score goals, they win games. 3-1 against Oxford recently, 2-1 against Bury, 1-0 against Wimbledon. Portsmouth away from home, 5 defeats in 8 on their travels. 4 of their last 5 have all ended with no points whatsoever. Defeats at Northampton, Scunthorpe, Doncaster Rovers and Blackburn Rovers. The bigger the journey, the less the chance of Portsmouth winning, it seems. When they come up north, they tend to walk away with nothing. And I think Blackpool at 17-10 at home to Portsmouth is a play. So that's my NAP selection. Could be over 2.5 goals in this one as well, and both teams score, but definitely Blackpool at 17-10. Looking at League 2, here's Al Ross.
So Crawley only have 2 home wins since February. They've lost 6 of their 8 home games this season, 7 defeats in 9 in all games at home, including to bottom club Chesterfield recently. Forest Green Rovers are the visitors. They've got their act together, 4 wins in 5, 3 wins and a draw in the last 4 away games, including at Coventry and Stevenage. Only denied the maximum, by the way, by a draw at Leaders Notts County. So you might not be surprised the prices here are evens and 11-4. But you should be surprised that it's Crawley who are evens and Forest Green, who have as many wins in their last 3 league games as Crawley have in the last 9 months, who are 11-4. You could point out that Crawley have drawn a fair few games recently. If that's what's bothering you, then take Forest Green or the draw at a still reasonable 8-11. But those draws were all 0-0 and gained by sitting back. Well, 3 of Crawley's last 4 league games have ended without a goal, all against teams who are higher achievers and against whom Crawley are not expecting a result. At home against Forest Green, however, they should come out more and leave gaps for a team who've scored in 7 of the last 9 away games in all competition. I can only assume the prices here are driven by the fact that Crawley are above Forest Green in the table because of Forest Green's awful start. 10 of Forest Green's 15 points have come from their last 5 games. Crawley's 6 points in 7 games have been flattered by those 3 draws and by a 1-0 win against the Morecambe side, who'd played for an hour with 10 men. So there's only one bet that there could be for a man looking for a side posted at the wrong price, and that is Forest Green, the NAP this week at 11-4.
So the thoughts of Gav and Al then. Thank you very much for tuning in to the Punt Podcast, this international version. We'll be back very shortly. Hopefully, you'll be tuning in again.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.